We back, Jules. It's Thursday. It's the Gab and Jules show. We're on the back of what, for me, was possibly the best game we've seen since the restart in any of the top leagues.
Yes, the Milan-Juventus game on Tuesday night. Pretty epic.
You will be getting into that. We'll be talking some Eric Dier, just to dampen the mood. No, but we'll be talking about Barcelona-Messi. Yeah. We'll have Sid Lowe joining us in the middle. I was transfixed by David Silva again.
Yes, so we got
to send him
a nice big
sloppy kiss. And then that disgusting weirdo freak in France. We'll be getting to him a little bit later. It's not funny. It's just gross.
It's not funny at all.
Anyway, let's start with Milan and Juve because this was an epic game. Yeah. We saw a goal of the season contender.
Yeah.
For those who missed it, hang your heads in shame. But Juve go 2-0 up. They play great for an hour. Earlier, of course, Lazio had lost to Lecce, and they're like, they're going 10 points clear.
This is it.
It's done.
And I remember Gigi Buffon, who was only on the bench, but coming on the pitch at San Siro with a huge smile on his face because they obviously all knew that Lazio had lost. And it was like...
It was also the way Lazio lost with your buddy, Patrick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Patrick channeling his own Luis Suarez very much and biting one of the Lecce players.
You know where Patrick comes from, right? You know where he came to Lazio from. From Barcelona. And I like to think, maybe this isn't it. Maybe I'm being stupid and unfair, but because it's my knowledge, Patrick hasn't bitten anybody else. But there was that moment in 2014 where Luis Suarez, of course, was banned for his biting of Chiellini in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And he came to Barcelona. He couldn't play. He just trained. Patrick at the time was in Barcelona B, some appearances on the bench, perhaps for the first team.
And okay, I see where you're going. Maybe.
Hermanito, look, this is how you do it. Honestly, in this age of VAR. But whatever, I don't want to talk about the guy. The guy's disgusting and creepy.
But yeah, Juve started the game knowing that a win against Milan...
You've seen this.
Yeah.
Have you seen this before? Have you seen Rabiot? Does he have this in his locker to
do that? Of course he does. I mean, the talent was never an issue. I mean, there's a difference still between talent and scoring a goal like this where you get the ball in your own half. You win a 50-50 challenge with Kessier, which is, you know, it's not easy to do considering how strong Kessier is. Then you not make Teo Hernandez, which again is not easy to do. And then you drive the ball for 50 yards in between all the Milan... Okay, maybe a bit apathic defense, but still. And then you hit it in the top corner, like in when maybe people don't expect you to hit it at that time. And it's an incredible goal. But I think for me, that sums up Rabiot's season and Rabiot's life anyway. He's capable of moment of brilliance like that. But what we all remember is that at the end of the day, it was pointless because Juve lost the game after he scored the goal of the season.
Poor guy. Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, also scoring.
Yeah.
This is kind of lost in the whole thing about Cristiano, but it's 21 goals in his last 17 matches for Cristiano. That is a lot of goals.
Yeah, it's a lot of goals. And that his goal came 6 minutes, I think, or 5 minutes after the Rabiot goal. So they 2-0 up after an hour, basically. So much under control, although Dybala is suspended. So Gonzalo Higuain came back in the team and started.
No, Matthijs de Ligt at the back.
De Ligt was also suspended. So Rugani played alongside Bonucci in that back four. But at that time, surely you, me, no one else could think that the next half hour we'll see Milan score four goals, right?
So for an hour, they play really well. They look good. And by the way, also on Cristiano, he had a stretch where he was scoring but was playing poorly.
Yeah.
Now he's actually playing really, really well. He looks fit. He looks on top of everything. And then the last half hour, Milan only go out and score four goals. Now, Sarri said, well, it was inexplicable. It's one of those things that happens. He kind of poo-pooed it.
Yeah.
Is it inexplicable or should we be giving some credit to Milan here?
Oh, I think Milan deserves huge credit, although the first goal comes from VAR decision, a handball from Bonucci, who I think is given and rightly so, but again, you know, this is one of those incidents in a game where, you know, it's not that Milan suddenly were on top and dominating and creating loads of chances and hit the post and hit the bar and Chesney has made loads
of steps.
Bonucci
had a terrible game. I think that was also a leadership question there, right? Because you reopen the game.
Yeah, but what else can he do? There's nothing else he can do.
Well, yeah, no,
it's
there's something you can do, and don't move your elbow towards the ball as it comes in.
But Yeah, yeah. Keep it closer to your body. Yeah, of course, but still, it's...
Look at what your friend De Ligt does every game and do the opposite. Don't put yourself in... No, I'm saying... This thing, I don't know, it's some kind of like illness affecting you as central defenders. But, you know, the reason Bonucci makes all this money, the reason we all praise him is because he's supposed to manage those situations.
That's true.
And defensively, there was a complete collapse after that.
Yes, you're right. And then Milan score again very quickly after... I thought bringing on Leao on the way
game changer,
yeah, the way Pioli did at that time as well, I thought was brilliant, and Ibra had a, I thought Ibra was a presence there. He had a good game. You know, he's 38 years old, so you can't expect much more from him than that. But in terms of leadership, that you said, in terms of okay, let's not give up even after the second goal, I thought that was important. Scores the pen, assist the second goal, then comes off, but he's involved in that second goal as well. From Kessié, and then at 2-2, suddenly it's a completely different board game, and you could see the dynamic has shifted completely. And then
Milan went to press them high. Juve struggled to get out of the
back. They had more energy as well.
Juve also looked. I mean, look, it could be entirely different without Dybala.
With Dybala back,
but you mentioned Ibrahimovic there. He's come out and he said that he said a lot of things, but he certainly hinted at the fact that, you know, he could be on his way, and had a little bit of some barbs at the top. Earlier this week, there were reports that Ralf Rangnick that the deal is done. My understanding is that the deal is not done, but obviously it's very probable.
Yeah.
The mood in Italy is everybody feels sorry for Pioli. They should keep Ibrahimovic now, as well as Pioli. Do you keep Ibra at 38? Is this something you would consider?
So I know we disagree on this, but I would keep him. I would keep him for many reasons. Okay, he costs you a lot, and the ratio of the money you pay for what you're going to get in terms of goals, for example, won't be huge.
Well, and minutes too.
And minutes.
He's been injured. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I think in terms of leadership, in terms of leading the line, leading by example, our training. In the games, where he can also bring you in the dressing room, as we saw in the game, he comes off, right? And I think it was really good from Italian TV to keep showing Ibra on the bench, because he was like Pioli's assistant. It looked like very much the Ronaldo in the 2016 European Championship final, where he basically almost managed the team, and Ibra was the same, getting up and shouting there and shouting it and do this and do that and be very much part of that. And I think that's priceless.
So especially giving him a salary as an assistant coach.
No, but you know what I mean? He still probably wants to play. But in such a young team, which would get even younger, with a new manager who will know nothing about Italian football, nothing about Serie A, I think it could be a good move to keep him.
I mean, I think the owners have a big call to make here. For me, it doesn't make any sense to keep somebody at that salary. You know, to me, really something you walk into the room and you say, Ibra, you really want to stay? Take a big pay cut
might,
so I can
he
extend
might.
On
we
a
We don't
room
know.
Or
he
whatever.
Might. Who he knows? Might do.
But I think the other element to this is if you go down a course, if it is going to be the Rangnick course. Now, it's true that somebody pointed out that when Rangnick was at Schalke, you know, he eliminated a strong Inter Milan side, and he had Raul, who's 13 years old. Yeah. But Raul and Ibra are very, very different players, right? If he says, to play the way I want to play, I need strikers with different characteristics, then that's it.
At
some point, you have to commit to something. I still think the best situation would be keeping Pioli as a coach with Rangnick overseeing him and telling Pioli, listen, like, you know the league, you are the most pragmatic manager out there in the sense that you've played every single system. You can play the 8-1-1 formation. You can do the aggressive high press. I mean, tactically, this is the thing, right?
Yeah, that's
true. Pioli has faults, but it's not in his understanding of the game and how to lay out
players. No, yeah, that's true.
If you can get on the same wavelength as Rangnick, and if Rangnick trusts you, then you can be the dude on the sidelines.
So a bit of the Nagelsmann first season at Leipzig when Rangnick was...
A little bit like that. The question is, would Pioli take that? Because, you know, Pioli's in his mid-50s now. Like, you know, it's not like... Otherwise, you know... You have to take the bold step. And people go on about, oh, but it's continuity. Look, they've had 8 managers. And yeah, there was different owners, different people making bad decisions. You know, the big question now is basically, do you reload or do you rebuild?
Yeah.
And I think the choice has to be rebuild. Once you go down that road, you have to embrace that choice fully. And it's also true, by the way, that, and maybe this is irrelevant because it's history, but if you think about Milan's biggest periods of success, they came after a massive revolution, which nobody believed in. Arrigo Sacchi coming in, everybody thought, oh, you're completely mad. And then after you replace Sacchi with Capello, and people are like, oh my God, you know, Berlusconi's totally lost it. So it was bold moves
that ended up
being game changing. And my thinking is, if you want to keep the status quo, yeah, you'll improve, you'll qualify for the Champions League. You're not going to cut that gap with Juve. Not this way. Not by bringing in veteran players on big money and whatever else. And I think that is what they have to get to.
So Milan win that game, incredible. Ante Rebic scored the fourth goal after, I mean, I don't know, Alessandro just, I mean, it was incredible mistake and those kind of things don't happen. Okay, what happens now for Juve? They play Atalanta on Saturday, a game that they could easily lose again. Atalanta will come back, will be 6 points behind. Lazio can potentially come back 4 points behind if they win as well on the weekend. Could this be like a huge game changer in the season, or do you think that they're going to steady the ship against Atalanta, go for a draw, and then still be very much in control to win the title?
The analogy with Atalanta is like it's a visit to a dentist, but not a nice dentist, like one of those mean German dentists who's actually a sadist.
Yeah.
I think this is where Sarri's management will be called into account, where the leadership of his veterans will be called into account. And it's going to define the season. We're going to talk about Atalanta a little bit later, but from Juve's perspective, you don't want things to get nervy towards the end because remember, Sarri hasn't been in these situations. He hasn't been in these nervy situations too many times in the past where he's had to manage this. So I think this is absolutely, absolutely a huge game Saturday night. And then they have Lazio coming.
Yeah, that's what I said, July 20th. So. Yeah, so it could all be, when we thought that maybe the title race, especially after the Lazio defeat at Lecce, that, okay, Juve is going to win at Milan. And then no.
No.
It's good that Serie A season keeps surprising us.
It's all coming to a head.
Yes.
A bit like Spain, but we'll go to Sidlo in a minute. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, time for Dr. Sid Lowe.
Dr. Sid.
There's a wonderful expression in Spain, which is Hay Liga, meaning there is Liga. There is a competition to win the title. Real Madrid play on Friday night. Barcelona played last night, won the Catalan derby. So I gotta ask Sid, Hay Liga?
No, of course there isn't. Well, I mean, like I say, of course there isn't. Of course, there isn't. You know, there's I suppose half a chance. But look, we're in a situation now in which Real Madrid have 4 games left. They have to drop points twice for there to be any chance of Barcelona win the league. Even assuming that Barcelona win every game between now and then the season, because of course the head-to-head record means that there isn't. You know, there you can't have this kind of goals chase for the goal difference to make up that extra, effectively that extra point. And Real Madrid have won 7 in a row. So what we're now asking them, having won 7 in a row, to drop points twice between now and the end of the season. I just don't see it. And they've been through the harder games. You know, they've come through the game against Getafe. They've come through the visit to San Mamés. You know, there's a couple of semi-difficult games. Maybe away at Granada is semi-difficult. Maybe at home against Villarreal is semi-difficult. But they start against Alaves. Now, I'm not saying that any game is ever guaranteed, but that's not a million miles off being a guaranteed game. And by the way, their final game of the season... let's say, for argument's sake, we do find ourselves in a situation in which, on the final day, there is still a chance for Barcelona to win the league, and they need Real Madrid to drop points against Leganés. Leganés, who by then will almost certainly have been relegated and therefore will have nothing to play for, and who also will have been relegated knowing that the final nail in their coffin was when Barcelona took Martin Braithwaite off them. On that final day, how inclined do you suspect that Leganés will be to do Barcelona a massive favor?
All right. I'll help you with this, okay? What if on the last day of the season, since you're allowed for some stupid reason, these emergency deals in Spain, which make no sense, what if on the last day of the season, Leganés pretends that their goalkeeper and their center forward are both injured and Barcelona send over Ter Stegen and Luis Suarez? Might that change it for you?
Well, this sort of reminds me. I mean, I can't think of a specific example, but there must be hundreds of these, and you know of soldiers trying to get away from the front line and shooting themselves in the foot to be able to demonstrate that they're injured and they can't carry on. So, is this what Leganés are going to do? I mean, to be fair, there are some people who quite like the idea of Leganés shooting Ivan Pichu Cuellar in the foot and saying he's injured 6 months. We need to buy someone. I'll tell you what, we'll have Messi. It's not going to happen.
You know, as well, obviously, as you said, Real Madrid need to drop points, but Barca also need to win the remaining three games now, which on the back of what we saw against Espanyol after what was a very convincing performance against Villarreal.
Thanks to our input, right, Jules?
Yeah, thanks to
our
input.
Tell Sid about that, because he doesn't listen to the show as religiously as he should.
And the change of formation, we did say before the Villarreal game that to use Griezmann to his best abilities and have Suarez and Messi also all involved, that maybe the way forward was the diamond midfield with Messi as a 10 behind Suarez and Griezmann. He was not as effective and as good against Espanyol, probably because he was a team that was there to defend and play so deep and there was no space than against Villarreal. Exactly. But how do you see that evolution going? You would think that it would stick with that formation now between now and the end of the season, right?
Well, look, he sort of tried it a little bit in the game against Atletico Madrid, where Barcelona actually played okay. The big difference there was that he tried it and the number 10 wasn't Messi. Messi was one of the front two and the number 10 was Ricky Puig. And Ricky Puig was coming through it from a kind of a midfield position. I mean, look, how do I see that evolving? I honestly don't know the answer to that, because I think even after the Villarreal game, you know, everyone watching that game got very excited. Well, not everyone. A lot of people got very excited. I must admit, at the risk of being a massive party pooper, I didn't. Because this is brilliant. But this is Villarreal. And the way that Villarreal play allows for that. And this won't be the same against Atletico or against Real Madrid or against the teams that they're likely to come up against in the Champions League if they get through against Napoli, which, by the way, is no foregone conclusion. And then what I didn't expect, to be honest, was for it to be so hard even against Espanyol. You know, Espanyol got more shots last night than Barcelona did. Barcelona really struggled to find a way through. And so that narrow formation where you got those three players in a narrow space, I think it does put them all closer to their natural positions, but it also puts them all treading on each other's toes a little bit. And I think that's fundamentally the issue here. I guess there is a broader evolution of this, which may be a more long-term one. So at the moment, we're looking at Suarez and Griezmann up front. Now, I mean, let's forget the fact, by the way, that it's perfectly possible that next year Griezmann isn't there. It's perfectly possible that Suarez isn't there. It's perfectly possible that they change the nature of the forward line completely. But let's assume it's those three. At the moment, you've got Griezmann and Suarez up front with Messi behind them as number 10. What if long-term, the evolution is actually Griezmann, Suarez, or whoever it is up front, and Messi not just as a number 10, but as an actual midfielder? Maybe more as an eight, or more as a, you know, more as a sort of right-sided of a midfield three, or that you restructure the team entirely to allow Messi to be there. But I still think even then, you can have Messi as that midfielder with two forwards in front of you. But if one of them is Griezmann, whose natural kind of gravitational pull is out to the right to come in or drop into that second striker position, his natural gravitational pull is towards where Messi plays. And so even if it can work really well, and obviously they're good enough and they're bright enough, these players, that ultimately there's a bit of you that thinks, well, they'll get there eventually. But it's not natural to them. You know, I mean, to give you a great example, right? You're looking at a front three, and I know this is a bit facile because they've just won the league by miles, but you look at front three like Liverpool's, and that's a front three that works. Why? Because all the positions fit each other. All the positions encourage each other to go into those spaces that make the most sense. I don't think Barcelona have three forwards who naturally fit together and naturally encourage each other into their best positions.
All right. I need to ask you about Ansu Fati's red card because we saw Messi get sent off on his debut for Argentina yonks ago. But is this something in character? Was it just a brain fart from him? Because that looked pretty bad to me and completely unnecessary.
Look, I'm gonna defend Ansu Fati here. I think if you look at what his intent was last night, you see he gets the ball first. And it says he's following through on his flight, if you see what I mean, that the defender's leg comes across and they catch. And so if the question is about, is this something about Ansu Fati's personality? I would say no. I think it was just the desire to get to that ball, to leap into the air. That involves taking a risk with where your studs are. But I don't see it as him trying to make a challenge. I see it as him trying to get to the ball first and misjudging it. So I don't think this is about a player with kind of, if you like, fire in the belly or a streak of nastiness.
I meant more like he's going to have to learn this, Jules, right?
Yeah. And the frustration.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know that's a different thing. I mean, that's exactly it. I think it's about learning that kind of challenge is taking the risk that you'll get a red card, rather than this was him last night. God, look at this. He's a bit of a nutter. No, I don't think it was an aggressive or nasty challenge at all. I think it ended up looking like that.
This thing with attacking players, learning things, I always go back to this, is here in England, all those years ago when Paul Scholes was playing, and sort of every 3 minutes, like, you know, Paul Scholes, like, there'd be a malfunction in his brain, and he'd go and engage in some homicidal tackle. And afterwards, like, you know, everybody would, because United would invariably win because they were really good at the time, and be like, ha, 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 Scholesy, oh, he never learned to tackle. And I'm like, it's not funny. It's not funny. He's just like ending somebody's career. Do you know what I mean? Like, but whatever. Yeah. Scholesy. I'm not saying he's a dirty player. That this is not, this can't ever be an excuse long term. I want to ask you about Lionel Messi. I wrote about this and throughout some scenarios, but it's all predicated on the fact that I am 99.9% certain that he's going to stay at Barcelona when his after 2021, when his contract expires. But Cadena Ser has, which is an important radio station in Spain, has reported last week, of course, that he has broken off contract negotiations to extend it. I think it makes sense. Why do it now? Why not wait to see some more clarity about what happens? But it is the unthinkable, right? It is the unthinkable that there's you open a portal into a different dimension where he plays for somebody else. And I'm wondering, Sid, is he kind of trapped here in the sense that the only way he can, well, partly he's angry because there's leaks from the club that say, oh, well, Messi wants this and Messi decides that and Messi wields too much power behind the scene, right? So that's part of the reason why, supposedly, he's been unhappy. One of many, you saw it with the Abidal situation and also the issue with the wage reductions. But then at the same time, he has to the only way he can exercise his leverage over the club is by not signing a new deal or taking more time or waiting for assurances. So in some ways, that actually is flexing his muscle. I mean, I kind of see this as like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Bartomeu saying they have an obligation to extend Messi's contract.
Yeah.
I mean, this is only going to end one way, but it's weird. It's almost like they're trapped, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, in a way, I mean, yeah, I start the starting point, and I'm glad you said it, because I feel like, genuinely, Gab, I feel like no one in Spain has said this. And your starting point was, it makes sense not to sign it now. I mean, that's a very, very basic point, which it feels like no one has really said here. It's like, well, why would he sign now? You know, we're at the back end of a season that's not quite done yet. We're still a month away from the start of that run of, you know, that kind of mini Champions League tournament. So we're a very long way from the end of the season. It's not like we're right on the edge of it, or even though it feels like that, because obviously we're at the start of July now. We're a very long way from the end of the season. There are all sorts of doubts about where it goes. Messi is 33. It makes sense not to do it now. And then there's the other thing. And this is where you say, are we trapped? In a way, right, I'm going to continue your metaphor to try and answer the question as best as I possibly can. They are trapped. They're in a locked, they're in a room, right? And they're trapped in a room at the moment and there's no way out. But there is a way out, because this time next year, someone's going to open the door of that room. There you go. There's the way out. It's going to, in a year's time, this is easy, because in a year's time, there's presidential elections. In a year's time, Bartomeu isn't there anymore. In a year's time, at which point Messi will have just come to the end of his contract, but he hasn't yet signed for anyone else. He doesn't necessarily, you know, Messi's not one of these people who needs to make a deal in advance with someone. You know, he could decide now that he doesn't want to stay at Barcelona, and in 2 minutes' time, his battery's gone dead on his phone because of the number of calls. We know that. You know, he can pretty much choose where he goes, depending on, obviously, his kind of financial demands and so on. And so, in a way, yeah, they're trapped, but they're trapped, but that door's going to open. You know, that door might be locked now, but it's going to open in a year's time because Bartomeu won't be there. And I must admit, I feel like, in a way, this is defined by something far, far more simple. And that is that if Messi renews his contract, Bartomeu will have the satisfaction of effectively saying, I've left Barcelona in good hands. It's all tied up. Messi's done. This is my success. I leave this to my successors. And that obviously reinforces the strength of any continuity candidate in next year's presidential elections. I suspect deep down that what Messi's really saying is, at the moment, now obviously this could shift because of course things may change in the summer. There may be promises made. There may be demonstrative expressions of improving of the squad and so on. But I think at the moment, Messi's fundamental mindset is, I'm not letting you have the satisfaction of that photograph of me and you shaking hands and you being able to say, I was the president that got this guy to stay. I'm not letting you have that, which is not the same as saying, I'm not going to carry on.
Could it be also as simple as if, so Bartomeu can't obviously run for the next next election, but there will be one of his candidates, one of his guys, right?
Yes, there'll be a continuity candidate of some sort, yeah.
And if this guy is elected, could that mean that Messi doesn't want to work with any of Bartomeu's team kind of anymore and then decide then to go?
It's perfectly plausible. That's perfectly plausible. But of course, that is a decision that he doesn't want to make now because we don't know who that candidate is. We don't know who's in that candidacy. We don't know who their sporting director will be. We assume it will be Abidal, in which case Messi won't be particularly keen, but maybe not, because maybe as a presidential ticket, they offer someone else up. We don't know what signings that involves. We don't know a whole load of things, because bear in mind, this is something we sometimes forget. Messi will know a lot of those board members, right? But he won't know all of them. And so imagine it is, let's say for argument's sake, you've got board members, Bob, Dave and Brian, right? Let's say for argument's sake.
Oh, come
Messi
on, you
really
can't come up with three weird Catalan names. Their names can't be Pep. Jordi, Pep.
Yeah. Josep.
Okay, all right. Okay, so it's Josep, Jordi and Pedro, right? imagine that Messi thinks Pedro's a right prick, but he quite likes Jordi. And he's not sure. Who did I say the other one was? Oh, Giuseppe. And he's not sure about Giuseppe, right? And he doesn't know which one of those three is going to be the continuity candidate. Well, it makes sense for him to not make up his mind now until he knows whether it's Bob, Dave or Brian or Jordi, Giuseppe or whoever the hell it was. I can't even remember who I said. Right? But so, of course, right now, Messi's in a position where why would he give Josep Maria Bartomeu that photograph, that satisfaction, that ability to, as they say in Spanish, presumir, what do we call that in English? I suppose it's almost boast, you know, to be able to presume to be the man that kind of tied up the future, got Messi signed up, that effectively hangs that medal on himself. Messi is saying, I think anyway, Messi is saying, this medal isn't yours, mate. And obviously then there's that secondary thing, as you've pointed out there, which is also he will want to see who the continuity candidate is. Are these the people that he knows and trusts? Are these people he doesn't know, in which case he wants to hear from them? Because, of course, the other thing in this, although Messi's never done this, if in next year's presidential elections, Messi still hasn't renewed, or in the build-up to next year's presidential elections, Messi still hasn't renewed, and at some point, Messi comes out and backs one of those presidential candidates, that's it. That guy wins. That guy wins. And so Messi is at least keeping that ace in his hand. Yep. He's probably not going to play it. But it's handy to be able to play it if needs be. And I think it's worth pointing out here, that needn't necessarily be seen as a purely selfish act from Messi. That could be about him saying, look, this club is a mess. And I want whoever the presidential candidate is that comes in to be someone who I think is competent. Now, whether Messi's right or wrong is another issue. I want it to be someone I think is competent. So in other words, if he sees that it's one of these, imagine it's Carl Donner, or imagine it's, who was it that he said, I think it might even have been Carl Donner who he said about, this guy knows nothing about football. Imagine it's this guy who knows nothing about football. Messi's going to go, well, I'm not backing him. I'll go and back Victor Font, who's going to be the challenger.
Well, Sid, thanks so much for that. I have a feeling we'll be going back to this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think we will a lot. a lot over the next year.
There's no shot of Gerard Piqué running for president. Being the first president player in the history.
Too early, no.
That'd be too early.
Wait a minute. I mean, I love that idea, and I think PK at some point may well position himself for it. But you know what? One of the reasons why PK, I mean, apart from the fact he said he wants to be president, one of the reasons why people think about PK as a Barcelona president is because he's very bright. And I just wonder if PK, being bright, knows that actually that's the last thing he's going to do.
At least right now, maybe a few years down the road. Sid Lowe, thanks so much.
Thanks, Sid.
Pleasure.
Cheers, Sid.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
As I mentioned, I wrote this very excellent, very well-written column, amazing. Very incisive, smart column about Messi's future, where I speculate that he's going to stay, but check it out. It's on the website. But what would you want to see? Would you want to see Newell's? Would you want to see Messi and MLS to transform the league? Or would you want to see Messi and Cristiano team up somewhere?
I don't want them to play together. Why? I really don't. I don't know. It will take away some of the magic of that rivalry they had for 15 years.
Oh, come on.
No, I promise you.
If it happened in sports, it would be so awesome.
I'm not sure it would be. And what if
Martina and Chris ever teaming up?
But what if they're not good? What if it doesn't work out? They can't play together because, I don't know, for millions of reasons.
And then the dream, and then we'd all think they're bad.
Yeah, and then
what do you want?
And then we'll
Newell's or MLS?
I go Newell's.
All right. Time will tell. Anyway, enough Messi. We'll be back with some quick hits.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
As wonderful as Dr. Sid was, it's time for some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
David Silva steals a show as City stomp Newcastle 5-0. So, Jules, you love your techers. Yeah. Feel free to celebrate him. And, by the way, if you were advising him, where should he go next? Because, of course, he's out of contract.
He's out of season.
We all assume he's going back to Valencia, but there's some people suggesting MLS, maybe.
I mean, first thing is talent never dies, and he will never die. He's 34, and he's still capable, against a team that, I don't know, traveled to the Etihad. You don't even know why. They were not there to attack. They could not defend. So,
when you saw the lineup he put out, you're kind of like, let me just tank this, play the 8-1-1 formation.
It's just like a man. Anyway, go back to David Silva. It's far more interesting. Talent never dies. And when you see him play like this, it's such a pleasure to watch, whether it's on television or at the stadium. And I don't know, there's something so romantic about the way he plays and that left foot and his movement off the ball and with the ball, etc. It's just wonderful. I would say to him, listen, go where you feel you will enjoy the most, because he's 34 years of age. Now he should only thinking about just enjoying it. You don't have to play 50 games a season. Just go and enjoy yourself. Go in a league, in a club where you will have nice people around you, nice team.
This is what makes me uneasy about him going back to Valencia.
He can't go back to Valencia. It's an absolute mess.
You know what Valencia is like? You know that joke that we all used to do as kids, where we would take a brown paper bag, fill it with dog poo, human poo in some cases, set it on fire and leave it on people's doorstep?
Maybe that's what you did. I mean, not me.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's not what David Silva needs.
I know. And I get the whole idea of going back where he all started. This is great. And this is very romantic. It rarely works. Let's put it that there. It rarely works. But and I just think, go somewhere where you will enjoy yourself far more than at Valencia, when it's a complete mess and where you probably won't get the praise and the... Well, you will get the praise.
Yeah, but it's just like this. You go from one of the best run clubs in the world to that mess over there.
With one of the best managers in the world to, we don't even know who will be in charge next season. So, I mean, you need to think hard about it, because he doesn't have much time left.
How cool would it be if he went to Villarreal instead and teamed up with Santi Cazorla?
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
That'd be nuts. Not going to happen.
Liverpool beat Brighton 3-1, and they're 9 points away from breaking the Premier League points record of 100 points by David Silva and City. Will they get there, Gab?
I'd assume
four games left.
And they need to win three of those four. We went through their whole schedule before. I personally don't care about
the points record. But
if why? Think, why don't you care?
Because it'll just get broken again at some point.
Really?
Because I think these points records, I think it's a big deal that they won the league and that they, the way they won it and how early they won it. What happens afterwards? I mean, he's, even last night, yeah, nice game. Salah got his goals. We want Salah to get more goals. Maybe it'll be head to head. It'll be exciting. Him and Jamie Vardy and who's in second?
Aubameyang.
But honestly, who cares? Like 100 points. We know that this is.
I disagree with you. You don't know if that would be beaten. Maybe it would stay forever, and all those players would be forever in the history books.
If they get
101
points, yeah, does it mean that they're better than Manchester City were 2 years ago?
It means that they'll have more points.
Okay.
Yeah, but, which is a better season if you have more points than someone else before you, right?
All right.
No, I think they care, and I think they should care.
I mean, look, yeah, it's just that records are broken.
True.
Titles stay.
Yeah, true.
Now, there's strong suggestions that IFAB would allow 5 substitutes next season, too, mainly to deal with the fixture congestion, the possibility of the lockdown and restarts and whatever. It's going to be up to each league to decide. Jules, are you okay with this?
Absolutely not. This is driving me mad. I saw it yesterday and I was like, why? Why would you do that? And I said it on the show last night. It's made by people, IFAB, who are disconnected from football. I get it why now you do it, because of the pandemic, because of all those games, you know, so close to each other and it's all a bit crazy. And okay, for next season, why? Why would you do it?
Because next season there could also be... So it's a procedural thing, right? So they have to allow it now, and then each league will decide next season.
Yeah, and I hope they decide each not league, to go for it.
Well, you know what? You don't know what happens. Maybe we start in September, and then when we shut down all of October, November, and they're like, oh, look, we have to play a million games. You know,
that's not going to happen.
Well, we don't know. We don't know. I mean, I think it makes sense to leave the option open, and then each league can do as they see fit.
It's a crazy idea. I've said it from the beginning. It's a huge advantage to the big teams and the big squads who can bring... Mahrez, De Bruyne, Aguero, Gabriel Jesus, all at halftime if they want to, and change their whole complete team. It's unfair. It's such an unfair rule. I hate it.
It's not. It favors those teams.
It's unfair.
Where there isn't. It all depends what the drop off is between your starters and your reserves.
Well, yeah, which the bigger squad and the best teams have in abundance,
they have
right?
Less than a drop off.
They have huge players on the bench. That's what big clubs are, and small clubs don't.
But you have to look at players fourth and fifth guy off the bench. That's essentially what you're talking about. Anyway,
still,
we disagree.
Still,
we've covered this before. Yeah. Let's move on.
The Champions League and the Europa League draws take place on Friday. Gab, how is it going to work? And what apart from the draw, what else will they announce?
Well, just a quick reminder, they're going to tell us about whether fans will be allowed in the stadiums in Portugal, because Portugal for the Champions League, Germany for the Europa League.
And it's unlikely that
and Spain
be fans,
for the
right?
Women's Champions League. I think at this stage it is hugely unlikely. Obviously, I sat down, spoke to the UEFA president, Alexander Čeferin. One interesting thing is going to be there's a whole bunch of round of 16 fixtures that still need to be played. They're set to be August 7th and 8th in the Champions League, August 5th and 6th in the Europa League. Some Europa Leagues, they haven't even played the first leg yet,
yeah.
The Seville game and the Getafe game. So those ones are going to play single leg, and that's going to be in a neutral venue. The other ones where you have a return leg, for example, Chelsea and Bayern,
yeah.
They're going to make a decision whether the logistics are there for travel, for safety, for security. If not, they'll play them in Portugal. But it's suboptimal. It sucks. But hey, given the global emergency we're in.
Yeah, it's better than
I'm just glad they can finish this.
And also, the draw will be made for the full draw. So you will know who you play in the quarterfinals, but then the semifinal if you qualify, and then final if you qualify again from the semifinals.
That's right. It's going to be
quite exciting, I think.
You can basically plot your path
all
the way through. I think they've done the reasonable choice. Mm. I mean, people will always quibble, but given the circumstances.
I agree.
Paul Pogba is rumored to be on the verge of extending his contract at Manchester United. Jules, tell us more, because this kind of... I mean, I figured at some point, look around, hey, you're going to move. Hey, well, let me just take more money, more years, and then evaluate the situation.
Yeah,
to anybody's interest.
I mean, you're a bit... That's a bit cynical, but that's a way of seeing it, of course.
What's actually happened? Did they get on the phone with Mino, or did...
So the start of the talks with Mino, I was told again this morning, will start very soon now. They always wanted to keep him anyway.
Right.
I mean, you know, after he came back, and I think when they realized that they had something good growing there, Bruno and Pogba together, for example, the younger players, all of this. And I think Pogba is happy again. I think he's happy of the way he's been playing. He's happy where the team is at, where the club is at. And I think he sees, you know what? He looked at times that there was no point for me to stay here because it was going nowhere. Now it looks like there's a bit of a direction. Whether you agree or not that Solskjaer is the right manager for it, whether you think that it's still way below City and Liverpool, for example. But I think that he feels there's something happening there and he's happy again.
And he's saying, why not? Well, it's also, putting this very realistically, yes, they are playing better and stuff. And look, we said all along, he wants to be a United. He loves the club.
He wants to be in a good United team,
possibly United team where there's no Jose Mourinho hanging around and throwing him under the bus. Remember that whole, stripped of the vice captaincy nonsense and whatever. But that said, nobody's queuing up with big money for Pogba and Mino, right?
Yeah.
And I think at that point, you're like, hey, things are going well. Let's extend the deal. It's in United's interest, too, because if you extend the deal, if somebody becomes desperate to sign Pogba, you'll get more money when you sell him. So it's...
He's 27. He turned 27 in March. You know, I think there's plenty of time for him to go somewhere else, Real Madrid or wherever. There's plenty of time for him to bring even more to United. And I think it would work for both parts completely. It took 4 months, but Eric Dier has been banned for 4 matches after running into the stands to confront a fan that was abusing his brother after the FA Cup game against Norwich. Fair verdict, Gab? You happy with that?
Yeah, this is such a... I think it is a fair verdict. I mean, I don't know what the sliding scale is because we don't... This is not something that happens very often. Yeah. What really bugs me about this is the people who said, oh, but, you know, he's defending a family member, or, oh, it's unfair because, you know, when there's racist abuse, people get... Look, I'm not minimizing racist abuse at all, but as far as I know, when there's been cases of racist abuse on a pitch, I think of Luis Suarez and Patrice Evra, he was banned for a lot longer than that. So that part of it simply isn't true, right? Yeah. But beyond that, what this guy did... I'm sorry, this is unhinged behavior. It's not like, as more of the facts here have come out, it's not like his brother is 10 years old and he was being set upon by a bunch of people in the stands. And there were no stewards around. There were stewards all around him. They've been very careful about not telling us how old his brother is, but you see pictures of him. There's a picture of him from 2018 with his shirt off. His brother is clearly a teenager, if not a young adult, and there were stewards present. And also, when he goes into the stands, according to the report, he doesn't run to where his brother is, because when he starts running, obviously the guy who was shouting at his brother ran off.
Yeah.
He goes after the guy who was running off. I think all these things need to be taken into account, and this is why he got the 4 match ban. Now, the reason it took so long, which is also a really weird thing, which hasn't been explained, is both sides in this were waiting for the police report. The police report was apparently never released. And then both sides says, all right, fine, let's go ahead without the police report. I just think procedurally, it just seems very, very odd.
Yeah, it
really so
strange.
This could potentially something very dangerous. Mm. I think this is more than reasonable ban. And stands on the show last night, the guys thought that he should have been banned for much longer, right?
Yeah. Craig Burley and Stevie Nicholl. So it was unacceptable that a professional player, you know, was going into the stand to sort out an incident like that. When a fan goes onto the pitch, he gets banned for life.
Exactly.
And in a way, you could make the parallel between the two.
Sticking with Spurs, just quickly, there's a suggestion that Kurt Zouma could be moving on from Chelsea and reuniting with his Jedi master, Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho, who signed him back in 2014 from Saint-Etienne to Chelsea. And now it looks likely, from what I was told, that Zouma will leave Chelsea. And Tottenham could be a destination. Mourinho certainly has been in touch and is interested to get Zouma back. He would cost you around 25, 30 million pounds. He's 25. Okay, he's not Beckenbauer on the ball, but Mourinho...
It's a great deal for Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, although against Palace on Tuesday night, he saved the game at the end with a last-ditch tackle. And that's what his game is about. If you know exactly what you would expect from him and what you want him to do, he could do a job. For Chelsea, I think, and Lampard, maybe not. you certainly don't rate him.
No, look, I mean, I think in this day and age, post-pandemic, with the guy's wages and everything, to be able to get 25 to 30 million for somebody who, he's not going to start for Chelsea next season. He's going to be,
yeah, and he
he's
going to
be
play
the number
regularly.
Three or number four, yeah, center back, because presumably they'll bring somebody in, yeah, or, you know, you can argue Christensen or Tomori might be better alongside Rudiger. I mean, I think it's not a bad deal. It's not a bad deal at
no,
all.
No, 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 definitely. You know.
All right, we back, Jules. More quick hits. Now let's take you all the way back to Monday, because this was an absolute wild ending between Sevilla and Eibar.
Yes, it was, Gab. I mean, first the game in itself, before we go to the dramatic end, and Lucas Ocampos scores the goal to put Sevilla 1-0 up. As he's done for most of the season, he's their top goal scorer, their best player, one of the revelations of La Liga this season, the former Marseille winger. And then...
And Monaco,
you're right.
So I forget who took him to Monaco, our old pal, Tor Christian Carlsen.
Yeah, that's true. It was the next big thing in Argentine football at the time. Didn't really turn out, but hey...
The Argentine Ronaldo.
Yeah, but now he's looking really good this season. And then, Vaklik, the Sevilla goalkeeper, gets injured. They've already made all the substitution. So Ocampos, who likes going in goal at training, for example, said, okay, I'll go in. He goes in goal. And what was really funny after the game, he explained, he said the goalkeeping coach of Sevilla said to him, okay, you know, if there's a cross or if there's a corner or something, just don't go out for the ball. Stay on your line, right? We played 10 minutes of added time. And at the end of that 10 minutes, corner for Eibar. Their goalkeeper, Eibar goalkeeper, comes up for the corner. The corner comes in. Lucas Ocampos, as a good student, doesn't come out for the ball, stays on his line like the goalkeeping coach told him. And the ball falls into the Eibar goalkeeper, who is then almost one-on-one no. with Lucas Ocampos, has a shot, and Ocampos saves it.
Twilight Zone stuff. Check out the highlights. I'm sure
incredible.
You'll find them on
Sevilla
YouTube.
Sevilla wins 1-0, which could be huge for Champions League qualification. Well. And I think he's the first player who scores a goal and makes a save as an outfield player, not a goalkeeper who then would have scored a goal in the game, for example, but to make a save and score a goal in the same game. So well done, Lucas Ocampos. Incredible stuff.
Wild stuff.
Real Madrid play on Friday night against Alaves, but Luka Jovic won't be there, Gab. He's in quarantine after hanging out with a friend who's tested positive before. Gab, there are strong suggestions that he will go on the market this summer. Do you think there'll be any clubs interested?
I think this is going to go down the route of he goes on loan with a buyback because obviously he signed a Real Madrid level contract. I mean, they're quoting 60 million or something. Nobody's going to give you 60 million for Luka Jovic in this market.
It's hardly played.
No, exactly. So the best you can do, take somebody in, maybe with some sort of buyback or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he joins the ranks of James Rodriguez and all these guys who hang around and who, you know, they can't move on because they're prisoners to their wage. Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
The difference is Jovic is younger. So I think there is a player in there somewhere, but he's got a
strange story
alone.
Though, isn't it? Don't you think? He was so good with Frankfurt last season. It made sense in a way.
You know what? He was good with Frankfurt last season and he played in this front three. Played in this team that was so attacking. He played in this front three with Sebastian Haller and Ante Rebic. But then you see him in real life against players with a bigger personality, against a team that maybe doesn't spend the entire game camped out in the opposition's penalty box, and it becomes a lot tougher. I think it's also difficult for them to understand, is he a center forward or is he a wide player?
Yeah. You know,
so much competition there.
But I still thought that he would learn quicker and adapt quicker.
Now, I was hoping not to have to talk about Farid El-Milali ever again. but Jules, I have no choice.
That's right, Gab. I mean, when you and I text each other the night before the show to suggest some quick hits, I didn't put it in my choice because I didn't want to talk about it. But you're right, we have to. The Angers forward, the Algerian international, who had a great season, breakthrough season last year, but he's in the wrong headlines again. He was caught, if you remember, before we went on to the pandemic break for masturbating in where he lives, looking at a girl in a flat.
Indecent exposure
right. from the little courtyard in their blocks of flats, to which he pleaded guilty. He actually did it twice, looking at that girl. And then he came out only a few days ago that before that, he did it already again, somewhere else in Angers city center, again, in daylight, masturbating, looking at another girl. I mean, he's got a huge issue, clearly.
I
this guy needs help. You should think long and hard whether you want somebody like this representing your club.
Well, I think now this second incident, well, it's the third, but with the second different girl, I think it's got too much now. And I think Angers, who gave him a new deal, by the way, just before the first incident, right. Because he looked really good last season, but you can't keep someone like that. It's so fine. I expect them to get
this is assault.
Yeah, this is non-physical assault. Atalanta have won 9 in a row, if we go back to football, 9 Serie A, 11 in a row overall. On Wednesday, they beat Sampdoria 2-0. Gab, Juve are next on Saturday, as we said, what an exciting game. And they can cut the gap to 6 points with just 6 games to go. Imagine.
I know. And as we said earlier, lots of people 4 points. Like, I mean, Atalanta, obviously, this is a story for the ages. What I thought was interesting about this game against Sampdoria was Sampdoria had to go for it. We saw less of the frenetic, all-out, hyper-attacking Atalanta. It took them much longer to score well into the second half. It looked as if the was going to come off. We saw in some ways a more mature Atalanta, an Atalanta that can play differently. Ended up scoring with Rafael Toloi, and then Muriel got a second.
Set piece.
Yeah, and this isn't the mention that we didn't know that they had.
Exactly.
It does kind of make you wonder, hey, if these guys don't have to go all out all the time to win, what can they achieve?
Yeah, what's crazy as well is that they drop points against Spal and Bologna. You know, the kind of games where you thought, okay, they're going to march on them and win 6-0. And if they hadn't dropped those silly points against they would be even closer to the title race.
Now, Chelsea beat Crystal Palace 3-2, and they're up to third in the table, passing Leicester City, who drew with Arsenal. But, Jules, it was extremely nervy at the end. What's the problem?
Yeah, and Palace hit the post, and in a big chance as well, they could have scored easily. Then Zouma, as we said earlier, had a last-ditch tackle right at the end as well. I think there's a few things. I thought for an hour Chelsea were outstanding. Really outstanding. Yeah, of course, structurally, in the formation, there are some problems at times because they're so much attacking-minded. When you play with Mason Mount and Willian and Pulisic and Giroud, obviously, but then you have midfielder, you know, like even Billy Gilmore, I think, is quite attacking-minded in many respects, and Kovacic, or in this case, Ross Barkley, but even Loftus-Cheek and all of that. I think there's an imbalance that could come at some point, and we saw it on the Zaha goal where there's just no midfielders around him. It's crazy. He can get the ball, turn, and then hit it for 20 yards, and there's just no one, in that sort of side of the pitch, which I think Lampard can address and can sort out, and they need a bit more discipline at times, especially when they lose the ball, you don't get caught out and stuff like that. And I do think because of that intensity, because of that attacking mindedness, if you want, there are times towards the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes, where sometimes they're tired. And I think when you play against a team like Palace, who are very strong physically, then maybe you run a bit off steam.
When they Palace were demotivated, but it felt to me like they may be demotivated. They got nothing to play for.
I didn't think they said were.
It freed them to be even better.
And yeah.
And nice to see my man Benteke score. First goal since 2018.
Yeah, something crazy. Like yeah. But I just to finish on that, I wouldn't be worried by that nervy ending of that game. I think it's the way you play as a Chelsea team that can come with it. But just to finish, sorry, really, Lampard said at the end, you know, we made some wrong calls at times, wrong choices. And again, this is a team that will mature and will learn from those kind of mistakes they could make.
Well, you got to be careful because people accuse us of having a pro-Chelsea, pro-Lampard
bias. No, it's not that. I saw on Twitter someone like, you know, but it's not that. They're doing some really good things and some bad things that they can sort out. Wolves, on the other hand, lose to Sheffield United, second defeat in the league in a row. They are 3 points behind United, who have a game in hand. And Gab, as we know, the Cars verdict of the City game can mean that fifth place can take you to Champions League. But even that, it would be hard for Wolves to get it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would need to have an absolute collapse, I think, either from United or from Leicester, possibly, at this point. And this applies to both teams. So Sheffield United just 1 point behind Wolves. It doesn't take anything away from the tremendous season that these two teams have had. By the way, shout out to Mr. Egan, who scores twice in two games. I never actually heard the guy talk because I don't go to Sheffield United mix zones. But he seemed so happy this time.
It was good. It was really good.
MLS is up and running again in the bubble in Orlando. Jules, it's been tough, but they're finally there.
Yeah, they're finally there without Dallas, who had like crazy zillions of positive cases. Nashville as well, not sure if they will take part now because of a lot of their players tested positive too. They got there. I don't think the journey was easy to get there. I don't think it would be easy now. Whatever happens now in that bubble, if anyone tests positive, I think we could see the end of that tournament. But for now, it's on. We started with the Inter Miami Orlando City game, which is my next question to you, was really powerful scenes that we saw yesterday. But I think it was important for MLS to have this tournament taking place. Like, it's important for MLB and the NBA and other American sports to play again. I think it could help the country massively in those very difficult times and tensions as well. So good on them. Let's see how it goes now. But I think it was important to kick it off and have it starting.
I think I'm right in saying, I mean, obviously the NWSL kicked off before.
A few days before.
They're also in a bubble environment, except they're in Utah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think when it comes to MLS will be the first men's pro team sport, I think I'm correct in saying, to come back. So that's pretty huge. And I think a lot of the controversies around this and will hopefully be put to one side once they start playing the games.
And I have just mentioned a little bit, Gab, we saw some really powerful scenes before that first game between Inter Miami and Orlando City.
Yeah, I mean, look, what you saw was the players from both teams taking a knee, which of course we see in the Premier League now before every game. But equally important was, A, you know, it lasted 8 minutes and 43 seconds, obviously a reference to George Floyd, but also we saw a representative from a group called, I think it's called Black Players for Change.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But which represents footballers of color in Major League Soccer, and they came and they stood around it and they did a raised fist salute, kind of forming a perimeter around it. I think whichever way you stand, it's really powerful. But beyond that, what I like about this compared to the Premier League version, is that especially this is the players taking charge and doing this. You know, we're not pre-printing shirts with Black Lives Matter on there. We don't have little badges from our employers.
Yeah.
They're taking charge of this, and I think that sends a an important message. And I think it's also worth remembering that the dynamic in the U.S. right now is different for many reasons than the dynamic in other parts of the world. So people making comparisons, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. All the tensions that we mentioned earlier, that's why I think it was so important. One, that MLS could resume in a different way, but with this tournament. Two, that you're right, the players took charge of, okay, what are we going to do? We won those 8 minutes and 46 seconds. It's a long time, but they were allowed to do it, and that was great. The players from the other teams were all around the pitch with the T-shirt, with the message they wanted on their T-shirt.
That's exactly it. They each had their own message on their T-shirt. It's not like, you know, wearing the T-shirts, no racism.
Have this,
this T-shirt. And, you
know. And I thought it was very, very powerful. And again, the movement is still going very strong in the US, which is very important. And I think that paid great tribute and show how much committed football players are in the US.
All right, that brings us to an end here. We have a North London derby to look forward to.
Yeah, we do. The weekend, we've got Atalanta-Juve.
Atalanta-Juve. It's a big, big
huge
weekend.
Yeah, huge.
So I'm hyped and amped.
Yeah, me too, for Monday already.
We're back on Monday.
Thursday, yeah.
There you go.